Tony.
It's all right. Just leave it alone. It'll be fine. I don't know about you guys, but for me, that is the best part of the service. And now we're getting ready to move into the sleepiest part of the service, the part where I talk. Who said shorten it? Actually, you may get your wish today. I don't know. We'll see. We might have to run it on a little long now. So we are in Jonah. We did Jonah 1, chapter 1, verses 1 through 10 last week, and now we are moving our way into Jonah 11, and we're only going to cover about 7 verses today, but they are an important element to understanding what Jonah is about to go through in chapter 2, and they also are important for us because there's things alluded to in the text that if we miss, we can miss an important part of understanding who God is, where he's at, and what he does for us. And so, like we talked about last week, Jonah gets a call from God. He doesn't like what he hears, so like a good Christian, he runs away. And he throws himself onto a ship. And we see the term over and over again. He goes down to the port, he goes down to the ship, and then once he's on the ship, he goes down in the hold. And where we left off, he had just been woken up from his slumber, not realizing that his sin has thrown this entire ship and its crew into chaos and turmoil. And the captain goes down and basically gives him the same message that God gives him. At the very beginning, he says, what are you doing sleeping down here? Arise and get up and see if there's something you can be done that can be done. And he basically gives away that he is the reason why they're going through this suffering. And so to start and to pick up on verse 11, a couple things we have to remember. First and foremost, sin breeds chaos. This is a concept I really hope you guys can understand and grasp and hold on to. Sin is bad because it is against the will of God. But also, we must know that when you sin, you are reversing the created order and setting up an environment of chaos around you. You've basically said to God, you know better than him on the way you should respond, the way you should act, or what you should do. You know better than him what you should do with your money. You know better than him in which direction your life should go. You know better than him the best use of your time. And you know better than him what actions are good and moral and what actions aren't. And basically, that's where we find ourselves in many parts of the church today, is this idea that we have become more moral than God. And there's entire theologies written around it. But for the most part, the outbreeding, we're seeing the kind of the conclusion of this. What happens when a group of people thinks they are more moral than God? And they can go through and they can start cutting up his word, cutting up his commands, deciding what is right, what is wrong, deciding what true love is, what true love isn't, deciding what the acts of love should look like, deciding how their kids should be raised. And again, as a parent, that's your choice as far as one human to another. But when it comes in regards to being a follower of Jesus Christ and a follower of God, we have mistakenly placed ourselves as the highest level of moral authority. And that's exactly what Jonah is going through right here. God told him, you will go preach to Nineveh. You will give the message to the Ninevites. And he said, they don't need it. They don't deserve it. I'm going to go my own way. He placed himself as a moral judge of God. And so as a result, his disobedience led to chaos. And remember what we see here, they're a secondary player, but he threw this whole ship's crew into danger with his rebellion. His sin not only caused chaos in his life, but caused chaos in the lives of those around him. We don't want to undersell it. Last week we read, they've basically financially destroyed themselves. The storm has come. They took all their cargo and threw it overboard. And now they're at the point to where they're just trying to save their life. And they're confused. What do we do to get this to stop? And the reason why they're confused is because they don't have an appropriate understanding of what and who God is. And we're going to get into that here in a second. But they look to Jonah for answers. And the reason why they look to Jonah for answers is because in their mind, they serve a whole group of gods. And these gods don't have any moral limitations. We're taking ourselves way back before Christ. The way they interpreted the world was that you were a human being, you were placed here, and you were at the mercy and the will of a God's desires or whims, and there was no expectation for your God to be moral. He or she could do whatever she wanted to you, and your job was just to appease them. If you found out they were mad, well, shoot, we better pay them off on whatever sacrifice or whatever way we can to get them to be happy again. And that's where the sailors are with Jonah. They realize a God is mad at Jonah. As a result, they're in this shipwreck. So they ask Jonah, starting in verse 111, then they said to him, what shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us? For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. I like that word. Hazardous is probably a better word. But if we want to try to narrow down, remember last week we talked about Ishtar being the god of Nineveh. Well, if we're looking at a storm and we're looking at a storm on the sea, more than likely the god these sailors were picturing was Baal. You guys might be familiar with that term, a popular Canaanite god, but he was the storm god of that region. And that's how he came and made his presence known, is he came on the lightning, he came on the clouds, he came on the storm. And so they're basically saying, we know this God is mad at us because he's here and our ship's in trouble. What do we do to appease him? And the sailors have basically run out of all other options if this is the point that they're at. They've abandoned their cargo. They've rolled dice or cast lots to find out who's responsible. They find out they're the ones that's not even responsible. So now they're like, what do we do? And Jonah passes along to him and he tells him. He gives him the answer in verse 12 when he says, pick me up and hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you, for I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you. So Jonah has the right answer, kind of. The only way out of this is for Jonah to get off of this ship right now. He has to repent immediately. His rebellion has to end. There is no way of waiting for it to get back to port. In God's mind, for Jonah to be obedient and to get back into a place of safety and out of chaos is to immediately turn around and head in the opposite direction. And that means he has to jump into the sea. But notice here, he doesn't say, let me take care of this. I'll just get up on the edge of the ship and I'll jump in and go overboard. He's depending on the sailors to throw him in. So in a sense, we're still seeing Jonah kind of trying to validate his actions through the sailors more than he's trying to validate them through God. He's already found out he's at fault. He already knows he has to go in the sea. Why is it important that the sailors have to pick him up and cast him in? It really isn't. But instead, he is, like when he left, like when he ran away, making an excuse for his disobedience. It isn't me that has to go into the sea, it's you that has to pick me up and throw me into the sea. And how often do we run into individuals, or how often do we ourselves act like this? We were just talking about a communion, making sure we are in fellowship with one another, but how often do we look and say, it isn't my job to go apologize to them, they have to first come to me, and then I'll make myself right. It isn't my job to pay back this money that I owe. They have to come to me first and tell me they need it. If they need it so bad, why don't they just come talk to me? And I'll give it back to them. They must not need it if they haven't come talk to me yet. And so it is basically taking his responsibility for obedience and doing the right thing and placing it on the shoulders of someone else. And so when that other person fails, you have an excuse for being disobedient. I would have made amends. That person never came to me. That person never talked to me. And so we see Jonah kind of doing that here with the sailors. You want this to end. You can get this to end anytime you want. You just got to pick me up and throw me over the board of the ship. When in actuality, if Jonah were to come in and do a cannonball or a jackknife, in fact, I think on the front of your bulletins, I got him actually doing a dive. He's doing like a legit hands out, low splash dive. I don't know if it looked like that. But either way, he could have cast himself into that sea. But he's still trying to find a way out of this. He's still trying to find a way out of confronting what he knows is right and wrong, and what he does not want to do. And so there's a reason why at the end of this chapter we're going to see a great fish come and swallow him up. Because the amazing thing, and I'm giving away spoilers here, the pagan sailors come to a place of obedience before Jonah even does. And they don't even know who God is. But we'll see that in a minute. Right now, Jonah says, pick me up and throw me in. So he places it on their shoulders. So of course they respond with, we're not going to be responsible for that. You want me to throw you in the water? You tell me you're a messenger of God and this God's angry, and you're saying to make him happy is for us to kill you? That doesn't really work like that. So what do they do? It says, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land. And this is verse 13. But they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous, am I saying that right? I like the way it sounds. Tempestuous against them. The sailors don't want Jonah's blood on their hands. And so what do? They row for shore. They're basically trying to beach the ship and get to shore by any way possible. Again, in their mind, they are running from a storm god. They're not running from, as who we know, Yahweh, the creator of everything, the creator of heaven and earth and all things. Even though earlier Jonah said that to them, they're still relying on what they know. They know if I get off the sea, I get away from the storm, I get away from the god. So it makes sense to them, instead of risk throwing this guy in and making this god even more angry, we're going to head in. And so we see the advice of Jonah, the man who knows God, the man who can take care of this, the man who can solve this problem for them right now, leads them into more chaos, more pain, more suffering, and more fighting. And I think it's an important kind of transition here, but notice at the beginning of this verse where it says, nevertheless the men rowed, they're no longer being referred to as sailors. We're actually seeing the futility of man's attempt to try to escape and dodge a pursuing God. They cannot do it. They do not have the power to outrun Yahweh. It is not going to happen, no matter what Jonah tells them, no matter what Jonah tries to lay on their shoulders. The person that should be telling them the truth keeps giving them bad advice, keeps putting them in more and more perilous situations. And as a result, these men are just spinning their wheels and not coming to a true knowledge of who God is. So Jonah, as of right now, might as well still be asleep. He's only told them half-truths. He's only led them halfway to the right direction. And it's put them in an even worse spot than what they were already in. But finally, the sailors, after running through their futile ways, are brought into obedience, and we see a transition come up here. Verses 14 through 16, therefore they called out to the Lord, O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood. So again, they're concerned about casting him over. They don't want to be the ones responsible for throwing him in. For you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. So what was their response? Now, this doesn't mean they became servants of Yahweh, but they gave the response that we're going to see from Nineveh here in a few chapters. The men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. In other words, you see a group of pagans repenting and now worshiping and at least in some part or some way serving the one true God. All through obedience. Jonah hit the water. They saw what was supposed to happen. It actually happened. And now you have people well on their way to conversion. Unfortunately, they reach this spot long before Jonah does. And in fact, everything you see the sailors here doing right now, you'll see Jonah promising to do next week at the end of chapter 2. But they're at a point of obedience that Jonah hasn't even hit yet. But how much chaos and how much suffering did they have to go through to get there? And the more important question is how long did the servant of God misdirect them and mislead them through his actions and his words before they got to a point of understanding who God was and what he was wanting? And so we end with Jonah in the belly of the fish. Verse 17, and the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. And if you look at this, it says 1:17 in our Bible. This would be chapter 2, verse 1 in the Hebrew Bible. I don't know why they break them up like that, but it shows you how interconnected these two passages are going to be. We're basically leading directly from one into the other. Jonah's in the sea, Jonah's in the belly of the fish, and then we get Jonah's poem and lament next week where he describes dropping down to Sheol, and there's a lot of important things. But these quick seven verses give us a lot of information we can focus on and a lot of understanding into who God is. And what can we expect from him? And the first and foremost, we have to realize that God pursues his children. And this is a hard thing for us to understand because a lot of times his pursuit is meant to bring us back into the family, bring us back into the fold. And so it comes and is followed by hard lessons that we have to learn to get us to turn back. Jonah had already run. He'd already put himself at the deepest part, below sea level, basically. throwing himself in the middle of chaos, and I'll explain what that means in a second here, to escape the will of God, how many options did God have for bringing him back at this point? And so a lot of times as Christians, we'll go and we'll be disobedient and we'll throw ourselves in the middle of chaos, and then we ask ourselves, God, why are you doing this to me? Where is this coming from? How come I got to go through this? How come I'm suffering like this? When we've all but limited his choices for bringing us back. We've cut him off. But the amazing thing we have to remember is, look how far he was willing to go to pursue Jonah. We do not serve a God that cuts his losses and just moves on to someone else. Even when someone's under discipline, even when, say there were to be a moral failure and someone would have to come replace me as pastor, it doesn't mean he stops pursuing me to bring me back in the fold. He will not cut you off. He does not see you go to a point that is too far. In fact, we see him willing to bend heaven and earth to get you back into the spot where you need to be. Let's look at some of the ways, when we look at the ancient Near Eastern mind, when they were seeing and understanding these events that were taking place around them, there's a couple things we got to add in here to kind of understand what the author of Jonah is trying to tell us. And so we have the storm coming in and wrecking the ship. For us, that is a natural weather event. To these sailors, that is an angry God personified right there in front of them. And they have the fear of God in their hearts while they're going through this. And then they're already on top of the sea. And if you don't know what the sea represents, what that represents is chaos. The sea was the great unknown. One of the biggest fears of an ancient Near Eastern person was to be cast into the sea. Why? Because they had no idea what was going on down there. Sea monsters, spirits, all kinds of things. In fact, that's why every early creation myth, including our own in Genesis, starts off with a chaotic sea in existence. This was the thing. If you wanted to escape God, you threw yourself into the sea. And then we have the men, and we understand just from a quick review of this, how the men represent sin. Their futile ways of trying to avoid the confrontation with God has done nothing but create more and more chaos around them. And then you have the great fish coming up from the depths to swallow Jonah. For us, it just sounds like a really cool kind of VeggieTales thing. But the sea monster in the ancient Near Eastern mind was basically their idea of Satan. It was the evil being, a lot of people called it Tiamat or Tiamat, but before the earth existed, it was this chaotic being rolling through the sea, creating chaos and agony everywhere it went. And the amazing thing we see, whether it's the storm, the sea, the men, or the sea creature, what do the pages of Jonah tell us who is controlling all these things? This is an important message. It's an important detail we cannot overlook. Everything that these people feared, that they thought controlled their life, at least from the narrative of Jonah, was being controlled by Yahweh. By God the Creator. And so they didn't need to fear the sea. They didn't need to fear the giant fish. They didn't need to fear the storm. They needed to fear God. And so he's basically undercutting every superstitious belief that they have. Everything that they thought they had to avoid has now become a tool for his use and his will and his glory. And what does he use it for? To bring back one stray sinner. To chase him down and get him back into obedience in the will of God. And that's an amazing thing. That should make you be comforted. Because yes, that means God can use scary things to get you back into his will, but look at what he's willing to do to get you there. He's willing to take everything that you believe has a hold or control of your life and show you this is subjected to me. Not me, but God. I was speaking on his behalf. And do you realize that? Do you understand that's the God that you serve? Do you understand that that's the depths and the lengths he's willing to go to bring you back into his family? Even when your disobedience has done nothing but cause chaos and hurt those around you, he isn't going to cut you loose. He doesn't just walk away. He will push heaven and earth to get you back into his plan and his will. That's how much he loves you. To the point that he is willing to show everyone around you while he's doing it that he is a God worthy of being worshipped. So even where you fail to give that message, even where you fail to share who he is to those around you, he is still going to use you in your life to demonstrate those things. Unfortunately, we put him in a position sometimes where we got to jump in the sea to confront the mistakes that we've made. And that's a scary thing. For us, it would be like walking, I don't know, what are you guys scared of? You guys are a bunch of farmers, right? Walking in the cornfield at night? There's aliens in the cornfield, right? That's what a movie told me. You guys walk out there in the middle of the night? Anyways, whatever it is your greatest fear, he's going to pull you through that to show you there is nothing that can limit my hold on you. And he's still going to take Jonah through this process. This is the process he took the sailors through. Jonah, we're going to read, he's going to pull him down to the bottom of the ocean. We don't quite know if it's figurative or literal. I think it's both. He's going to take him to death. He's actually going to put Jonah in the place where the Jews believed God could not go, and he's going to put him in there just to pull him out of that. Because that's what Jonah needed to come up and be like the sailors to say, you are the God above all gods. You are the creator of heaven and earth, and I will fear and serve and worship you. And so many of you right now are like Jonah, like we talked about last week. Last week we talked about many of you are asleep. Even worse, some of you, and you might literally be asleep right now, but I'm not talking about that. It's a good, what's the word I'm looking for? Analogy, though. But many of you were asleep spiritually. There we go. But also some of you may be fleeing. And as you're fleeing, you're just creating chaos around you over and over again. And all those around you are getting hurt, getting wiped out. And it's all because you refuse to turn around and face God into chaos. And even subject yourself a little bit to jump in and say, I've put myself here and I'm going to trust God to get me out of here. Now, I want you to imagine how scary that is, though. All right, God, I'm going to be obedient. I'm going to do what you tell me to. And then you get swallowed by a giant monster. Sounds horrible. But it was exactly where Jonah needed to be to get back on track and to get back to where he was. And the point is do you fear the monster more than you fear God? Do you fear the chaos more than you fear God? Do you fear the results of your sin more than you fear God? If so, then he's going to take you further and further down this path until you get to the point to where he becomes the one that you serve, worship, and even though we don't like to say this, even fear. Not in a, oh my gosh, he's going to kill me at any moment, but in a, he is the creator of heaven and earth. He had the power to send me to hell. He chose to save me through his son, Jesus Christ. And so what we need to realize is that everything we fear in the world is nothing compared to God. And as a result, we are going to get you guys out of here a little early today. There, you happy? Everything we fear is nothing compared to Jesus. And that's what we have to understand, is that we now have a name for our God. The Hebrews did. They never said it, Yahweh. But we have Jesus. And just like Jonah, he was able to prove, or unlike Jonah, he was able to prove that he controlled the wind and the seas. Mark 4:41. Who is this that controls the wind and the seas? But also, he spent 3 days in the belly of the beast, not so he would learn repentance, but so that we would be capable of repentance. So Jonah was exactly where he belonged because that's where he deserved to be. Jesus took that on our behalf so we could be obedient like him. He is willing to step into that chaos for you so you can come out unscathed. The question is, are you willing to follow him and bring other people out of that chaos like he brought you out? He already took the humiliating act, like we said, of going into the belly of the sea monster. Like he says, like Jonah, and this is in Matthew 12:38-41, I won't give you a sign except for the sign of Jonah, where I'll go into the earth for 3 days and three nights. But then what does he say right after that? But you have to recognize one greater than Jonah is here. And if Jonah was able to bring the Ninevites to repentance, what excuse do you have for not repenting? If now you are following and you're serving one greater than Jonah. And that's the question we have. And that's the question I leave you with today. Hopefully after last week you woke up. Now that you're awake, are you in obedience, or are you creating more chaos for those around you? Are you walking in step with the calling that he's given you? Or are you still convincing yourself you can get on the rows and you can just outrun the storm and hopefully you'll dock the ship, ground the ship, get off and escape? And that's the question each one of us has to ask, especially when we know we're not in obedience, especially when we know we're struggling. But if you're at that point where you realize you're in the chaos, you're facing the storm, the ship's about to break up, those around you are in danger, sometimes the best thing for you is to turn around and face that chaos and trust that God is capable of bringing you through that, because he's sovereign not only over your life, but even over all the superstitions that you hold and you fear and you run from. And so, that's the goal today. If you're in chaos, you don't have to make it back to land. You just got to be willing to jump back in the ocean. And guess what? When you get in there, it might get even more scary. But that's okay. At least you're obedient and you're where you belong. Let's pray. Dear Father, I thank you so much that you are an awesome God and you're an amazing God. And you're willing to show us continually how much you love us. You're willing to pursue us. And you're willing to use all the resources at your fingertips to chase us down and bring us back into obedience. I ask